is Welcome to Super Garbage Day, a retro video game review show where an actual garbage man plays games 20 years or older that you, the listener, chooses. I am your host, the Nature Boy B. Ross. So Backlog Eternal, the Patreon exclusive series, has had a little bit of an adjustment. And seeing how now I release these episodes on the main feed on Fridays, I think the first impression videos for the games that are picked every week are just going to be uploaded to YouTube, and the Twitch streaming will be moving forward the Backlog Eternal choices. What's Backlog Eternal, you wonder? Well, it's our Patreon exclusive series where every month we pick a category and I randomly grab four or five choices from it. The community votes on it, and whatever game is picked, I have to beat. Now, there's really no timeline. I just have to beat it. Maybe not as fast as I can, but I just have to make sure I complete it. And then once it's complete, I do a full review on it, and that's on our Patreon. $2 will get you access to that, plus 20 plus other episodes of Retro Deep Cuts and Super Garbage Bowl and other things that we work on this neck of the woods. Please leave a review if you like the show. If this is your first time listening, welcome to the show. You're going to have a lot of fun. And that's it. You can leave a review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or Google or CrotchPod or whatever you use to hear this show in your ears. Merch is available. We have a link in the show notes. So if you want to walk around in a cool, sexy shirt that either is Bassin's Black Mass, made by our very own world-famous Ryan Miller, or otherwise known as Mr. Miller, or you can walk around with the gigantic Super Garbage Day logo on your chest, and everybody's going to be like, yo, dude, what is that? That's amazing. Where'd you get that? You're the man. Here's free drinks. You know what? Actually, here, take my car. Actually, you know what? Here's my house. That's the kind of reaction you're going to get when you walk around with this kind of merch on your chest. We'll work on pants. Maybe down the road we can sell some pants, but I'm not sure if I have the kind of logistics or supply chain for that, but I'll talk to some people. We'll see what happens. Our Discord is amazing. If you aren't a part of it, please come and join. It is free. It is in the show notes. We just talk all day long about retro stuff or our own hobbies. A lot of the community does their own things. A lot of people have like their own podcasts or YouTube, or they just paint miniatures, or they have like car, you know, they work on their car or whatever. It's really great. It's a wonderful, safe place. Come check it out. Come join. We'd love to have you. The Discord in the show notes, like I stated. All right, let's get to the retro question of the week. This one comes from, Banjo Kaczynski again. See, I'm randomly picking these. So he put a lot in there. Probably going to be a lot of Banjo Kaczynski in the future. Unless you want to come into the Discord, go into the retro question of the week and add your amount of them. You can, unlimited. You can, as many as you want, as long as they're not like weird and personal questions. And Banjo Kaczynski asks, what is a game that you loved as a kid that most people consider a bad game? Great question. My mind immediately goes to Mutant League Hockey on the Genesis. So I was a big Mortal Kombat kid, you know, when it came out, that was like the world to me. Mortal Kombat 1 and 2. I was absorbed with that whole gore and edginess of the early to mid 90s. That's why Bloodstorm, the arcade that I spoke about a couple episodes ago, was like such a big part of my childhood memories. But Mutant League Hockey is a, you know, it's a hockey game that's, I think, EA made, right? I think this is an EA sports game. And it, you know, it goes the route of being crude and rude and violent. I loved it. I loved that game. I played the hell out of it. But if you revisit it, you now realize that the the Genesis has a really hard time processing that game. It looks like it runs at about 15 frames per second. But I didn't care back in the day. And even now, I don't care. I think the game is charming and fun and silly and ridiculous. And even though a lot of people consider it a terrible game and that the Mutant League, because they had like football and hockey, but they think that the franchise itself is like whatever, a cash grab to be like to grab on that edgy attitude, gross, violent era. I still like both those games, but Mutant League Hockey for sure. Also, good luck finding a physical copy. Oh my God, it's so expensive these days. That's my answer. Now let's ask, what are you playing? I've been on a Tony Hawk kick lately. Since modding the PlayStation Classic that I got a hold of, man, I've been flying through Tony Hawk 1 and 2. And I started up number 3 and I realized, like, it's not as good as the first two. It's, I don't know, something about it looks worse. Is it just me? Somebody tell me that Tony Hawk 3 isn't a worse game than 1 and 2. Maybe it's because by number 3, I didn't care anymore. I obsessed over the first two Tony Hawks in my, I guess, my preteens. That's when it came out. But 1 and 2, man, they're so timeless. I'm playing Tony Hawk 1 on my N64, and I'm playing Tony Hawk 2 on my PlayStation Classic, also number 3. So that's kind of what I've been up to, other than, you know, finally beating Gex 3 Deep Cover Gecko. Oh, so that's the latest episode of Backlog Eternal. If you want to hear how I feel about that gosh darn game, join the Patreon. $2 will get you access to all of those beautiful bonus episodes. Okay, so we have a treat this week. Our friend Van Fernal from the Van Fernal Retro Stream is joining us this week to talk about this game. And what is this game, you ask? Well, let's get right into it. Let's hit up the phone and bring in Van Fernal so we can talk about Eastern Mind, The Lost Souls of Tong Now, or New, or No. Tong No? Tong Now, New, No? I don't know. Let's play the Rayman sound. Let's go.
Yeah!
Van Fernal, the man, the myth, the streamer from the Retro Stream channel on YouTube. Van, how are you doing today?
I'm good, Biraza. Thank you for having me, man.
Always. I'm very glad you're here, and I'm glad to talk to you before we started recording. Always a pleasure. Also, big props to Mrs. V. She is also a gym, and you guys are both amazing, and I'm glad that you're on the show today.
Oh, yeah, she's definitely a big part of what Retro Stream is. She actually, you know, she started out making the thumbnails and everything, has been super supportive of it all. And I think that's the reason I keep going.
That's great. It's good to have a graphic designer in the same household as you. So,
oh, yeah, it has so many perks. I mean, that's not why I'm with her. And, you know, hey, I love you, just in case. It's not because of that.
Well, that's good. It's good that all of our arts and our interests are coming together and for this podcast. So,
yeah, we're all the artsy types here. The thing is, like, I went to school for that. I actually went to film school. I never used it for anything. And now that I'm actually into content creator, it kind of came full circle. Now I'm actually using what I studied for. So that's a big perk for me.
You know, that's really interesting you say that, because I also went to film school. Like, I studied film in my early 20s. And then outside of that, I went off to do, like, I did like a couple independent film projects and all that. I wanted to be an actor. But then as I aged, I wanted to be behind the scenes, and then I went back to school to get a multimedia design degree. So that, and then I realized that I was like, I enjoyed editing audio. And so it's so funny how, like, creatives like us end up, like, finding each other in the same realms. But that's really cool.
Yeah, it's kind of funny. Yeah, we're like boomers in, like, our early 40s who are into the retro gaming space and studied film. You know, that's there's a bunch of us out there. There's dozens of us out there, at least
hundreds of dozens. But also, I want to give you props, because, like, your aesthetics and your production is so good. Every time I watch it on YouTube, I'm always blown away by your transitions. The quality of your production is just great. It makes me better my production on that end, because I'm not really so much a video production person anymore. But I have to give you props on that, man. It looks so good. It looks so good. And if you haven't seen it, please check out Van Fernal's Retro Stream Show on YouTube. I'll have the link in the description.
Yeah, I always try to be a little extra with everything. I don't know. It's just I can't really settle for just, you know, using generic stuff. I have to add my little, like, details, like the CRT screen, all that kind of stuff. I just felt it fit the niche I'm in, and it just makes it a little more interesting. But yeah, it's we have a lot of fun on the stream. If you're if you like it, retro games, you can just check it out anytime. That's cool.
Yeah, man, it's great, and I recommend it to anybody who loves retro. So speaking of retro, the game pick this week is Eastern Mind, The Lost Souls of Tong Nu, which was from my Patreon pool. All the games are picked from that. I don't have any choice in the games I play on the show. This being the most obscure, definitely. This also was a entry from Julia, which kind of blew my mind because I was like, what is this? What is this weird game you put in here? And then she laughed and looked at me and said, oh, I'm just trying to troll you. Right. Then I played it and then you played it. And then we were like, let's have Valferno come on the show and talk about this because it's a game.
wait, let me get this straight. This was a Julia pick?
Yes. She's been on a heater. So like I pick everything randomly off of a wheel. It's like willofnames.com. You input all your different whatever, and then you hit it, it spins and lands on a wheel. She is inputted. She's been so lucky lately. She had Wind Waker and then Super Mario Sunshine and then this game. And I'm like, wow, you've had like three games picked in the last month and a half. But to be fair, she put Wind Waker and Super Mario Sunshine almost like 8 months ago. So it's not as if like it's happening recently. But this game was her most recent. Actually, no, she most recently put in Moonwalker, Michael Jackson from the Genesis. But I swear, it ain't going to get picked this week because we actually have a special guest selection this week. But yeah, she's been lucky. And I don't know what she was thinking or what went through her mind to pick this game. But apparently this is the reason we're having this conversation and we're doing this episode.
All right. I think you should seriously take a really good look at your life and how things are going right now and see why she's putting you through this type of stuff.
Well,
so,
well, let's get into it. Let's talk about first impressions. Okay, so Van, what were your first impressions of this game?
Oh, wow. That is such a loaded question.
Loaded. I know.
So I liked when I'm doing a first impression, I like to do as little research as possible because I just want to go in with an open mind. All I knew is this game is the mind child of Osamu Sato, who is apparently a Japanese artist of different types of media. And I knew it was a point and click adventure. That's about as much as I knew going in. And when I went in, my first impression was, what the hell is this like? Is this serious? Is this, you know what it reminded me of? You remember a magazine from the 90s called PC Gamer?
Yeah, I do remember that. I had a subscription.
So PC Gamer, you know, it came with a CD with demos. Sometimes you will get some bangers, like you will get a shareware episode of something like Doom or something, and then you will get this demos for these games that they look like they were like student projects, like they were just really cheap and looked just weird and unprofessional. That was my first impression when I actually looked into this.
It does. I mean, it's 95, right? So it's my first impression, you know, I told Julia, I'm like, I'm not gonna look into this game at all because she was laughing when it got picked. And I'm like, why are you laughing? She's like, I'm kind of trolling you. I'm like, oh, okay, well, I'm not gonna look research at all. I'm just gonna go into it. Wow, what a game to do that. Because my first impression was, what is even going on? Well, I mean, actually, my first impression is I can't get this game to run. So with help from you, thank you for sending me the files to make this run. But I tried to do a first impression video. I tried three times. This game is cursed. It's just would not work. And then when it finally did, and I recorded it multiple times, there was always an issue. It was just not like aligning and coordinating with my capture program.
Oh, trust me. I spent an obscene amount of time trying to just trying to get this to run, installing a DOS box. Then I just happened to stumble upon someone who made an executable you can just run in modern systems. And I'm like, okay. And even though I got it to run, it was still pretty janky. You were forced to run it at full screen, basically. Capturing it was a pain because I also captured it to my first impressions, but this game just did not play nice with modern systems.
Also, did you have the same problem I did with the mouse cursor? Because I had to really tink around with it to get it to even work.
I don't know if that's by design. It's just the way the game works, because this game is janky as hell pretty much in every aspect of the word. Like, it just doesn't feel like a professional release of a game.
And you said Osamu Sato, he before this, or maybe after actually, he created a LSD simulator on the PlayStation.
Yes.
Right.
LSD Dream Simulator. That's one of those games you always see in underrated or obscure PS1 games. And it's just that. It's very weird. You're just kind of, it's like a first person type thing. And it's very psychedelic and stuff.
Yeah.
So I genuinely think this guy had issues. You know how I said that everybody jokes that Super Mario, he's doing mushrooms and all this, and the star, basically, it's like acid, he's seeing colors and all that stuff. We joke around that kind of stuff, that Miyamoto was just on hard drugs. This guy, I genuinely think there's something wrong with him. He's doing some hardcore stuff or something, because this game, the LSD simulator, they're all very psychedelic and just weird in nature. It's again, they feel more like art projects he did, like art vanity projects, than saying, hey, I want to design a game itself,
I agree. And it's also way out there. And this is an artist who definitely has a message about afterlife and perception, I guess, of reality. But man, to think that he had these platforms to express these, because he made this game, then he made LSD Dream Simulator. So somebody in Japan must have been like, no, I feel this dude. Let him cook, But man, when this guy cooks, he makes a buffet of wildness. And this game, I just don't know. I played a lot of it this week, and my first impressions were, what is even going on? To the point of me laughing sometimes, being like, this is almost a comical representation of a crazy person who's high on psychedelics talking to you, but in a point and click instance,
Yeah. The thing is, I can't help, I did just check a full playthrough on YouTube after I was done with this game. It wasn't, I seriously gave it a try to beat this game just on my own, and I put in the hours, and I felt like I made absolutely zero progress, but I did watch the whole thing, and I believe there is a deep message here, but the delivery is dude, if you're trying to get a point across, you gotta give me something to work with,
It's very cryptic. And also, it's trying really hard to be enlightening. I feel that. But also, I have to give credit to this project that it is, obviously a labor of love. This person really feels this way about...
I'm actually extremely surprised that this game actually had a Western release. who okayed this, on the West? Because it's definitely very Japanese.
Right.
And, the fact that someone went we can actually release this on the West and, there will be a market for it. I don't know who, this was what, Sony Interactive, was it?
Yeah. I think it was, Sony, publisher was Sony Music in Japan, Sony Music Entertainment. And then North America, it was ImageSoft. Yeah. Sony ImageSoft.
Okay, so I think ImageSoft, they made a couple of Super Nintendo games, Smart Ball. I think the
Cliffhanger,
Skyblazer.
Yeah.
And I think Hook. I think all of those were them, but I think they probably after this one, that's why you don't see much more of their games, I guess.
Well, I'm wondering if this, I didn't look it up, but I'm wondering if this is one of those games that's like worth a lot of money to have a physical copy of.
A physical copy of a 1995 CD game? Yeah, good luck with that.
I guess no matter what, it's probably going to be expensive. But let's get into gameplay. So we've talked enough on how weird it is. Let's talk about our experiences playing it. So it starts off giving you a little bit of a storyline about your character named Ren, and you die, and it explains that that Tong Nao or Nu, I don't know how to pronounce it, but is like the realm of an afterlife that kind of decides, almost like a Grim Reaper-esque spiritscape that you come to, and you have to apparently it takes a soul every year or years and eats the souls, and then there's this character Ren is trying to go there, and I really don't know, I'll be honest with you, like what was your perception?
Well, I'll give you what I picked up. So this character named Ren. So another thing about this game is that I feel like maybe a Japanese version, a Japanese person translated the game, because the translation is a little literal sometimes, and it doesn't make much sense. Because Ren, it says that he finds that there's no soul and that it has something to do with Tong Nao. So I think that Ren felt hollow inside somehow, and Tong Nao is an island where the souls go to be purified for reincarnation. That's what I picked up from there, and that he decided to go to the island of Tong Nao to see why there were like no souls in people. I think that's what I gathered to the best of my ability.
Well, and also the island of Tong Nao is literally a face, a green face that you have to explore, and the ears and the cheek and the back of the head are different areas of entry into more levels. But then I found out later that the actual face is the creator. Like he actually had his own face put into the game. So
that is actually Osamu Sato. So I can just imagine the pitch, like, I want to make this game about reincarnation and purification of souls in an island that's my face. And they were like, yeah, sure, let's do it.
I'm wondering if he was a rich kid that, like, had, like, some kind of push, like, his parents were, like, really wealthy or something. And he was like, yeah, let's make this project. I'll make it happen. They had to give him the time of day because, I don't know, this is totally me just, like, guessing. But this is so out there, I'm surprised that it exists.
Yeah, it does feel a little narcissistic, doesn't it? It's like,
yes,
this is an Osamu Sato project, and it takes place on Osamu Sato's
face. But I don't think it's too narcissistic in a sense of like Diakana or whatever, like the guy who made Doom, who was all about himself. What was his name?
John Romero.
Yeah. Like, I feel like this guy really wanted to get a point across, like, about, like, spirituality. And there's a lot of, like, Buddhist and early Chinese religious views here about reincarnation.
Yeah, I think I'm not an expert in, like, Eastern religions, but I think it's very, like, Taoist and, like, maybe a little Shinto in there. So it's definitely, it has that, you know, those old Eastern religions there intertwined.
Also, like, as you go through the game, you know, it's a point and click adventure in the vein of something like Myst, and you are just exploring, and while you're exploring, you're coming across so many nonsensical things that you have to make, maybe you don't have to make sense of, but there is this overall narrative that's telling you about, like, well, you're dead, and it's trying to explain to you that, like, life and death are the same thing, and they're all exploration, and that your character will eventually die one way or another in the game, and then you're granted 9 lives, and then you're you're given items to help you figure out like what you're supposed to do, and then you're reincarnated. You get to choose how you look. You pick like eyes, a mouth, and a nose. And how you?
Oh, and they look atrocious. They look disgusting. Like you make a character in this game, it's like picking like your eyes and your nose and your mouth, and these things, like, it's hard to describe it.
It looks like a real monsters character generator.
Yeah, actually, I think that's. I think a real monsters looks much better than this. This looks just like. This looks like some early MTV commercials, like claymation type.
Do you
things,
remember?
You know?
Do you remember Liquid Television? On
yes, you know, I was exactly thinking about Liquid Television when I was like watching this. Yeah. I'm like, this looks like and like those early CG like shorts that they had there.
Yeah, this totally fits that bill on that. But also a lot of eyeballs. Yeah. There's a big emphasis on eyeballs in this game.
Yes, there's eyeballs anywhere. And the one thing I played this game, and look, I'm not a genius, but I do consider myself to be very clever. And this game made me feel so stupid because every time I thought I figured something out, I was so wrong. Like, because this game, it's like, I think, let me just paint the picture of how the game like plays so that they have an idea. So you start out the game, there's a narrative, the guy has to go to like the Tongno, the land where they purify like spirits and whatever. So you start and you see a green face, and then you just like this bopping music just kind of starts, and you start clicking around the eyes, the cheekbones. When you click on them, you can like go through a portal and that kind of stuff. It's just weird. So you can go and rotate the face. So I went through the ear canal to one of the lands. I don't remember which land it was. It was the Land of Desire or something. So there's this fork on the road. I'm just walking. This is Mist style. And I ran into this monster, and this monster said he was hungry. And I'm like, okay. And then it just ate me. I'm like, and then I get the message saying that, yeah, your life is fulfilled. Like your mission is fulfilled. You died. I'm like, okay, perfect.
I ran across that same creature. Yeah, you go. It's not the Land of Desire, because like the Land of Desire is like this weird enclosure area that has like golden golems, and you come up just like dead creature and this thing. Oh, I don't even know how to explain anything in this game, but I'm trying my best. But you were in this like you were in the section that was like an open field where you had forks in the road. Then you come across that weird creature with the teeth. So it, when it opens its mouth, it has like a messed up tooth that if you click that tooth, it hurts it and it goes away. If you don't do that, it just eats you.
Oh, so that's of course that's how what you had to do. So I was just like, on my next life, I went, you know what? I'm not going through that fork on the road. So I just clicked on a stone, and the stone, like an eye grew from the stone, and suddenly I was in a market.
Oh, yeah, the market. And where then, there's like one person, like a weird market that only has one area you can trade with another weird creature that's full of eyeballs.
Yeah, so I go there, I see what they have to trade, and I notice the guy has a peach. I'm like, okay, so if I get the items to get the peach, I can feed the monster and go through the path. So I go there, I do all crazy click around, I finally find the items, I exchange for the peach, and I'm like, okay, now I could go back to the fork on the road. So I give the peach to the monster, and the monster goes, haha, I don't like that, and he eats me anyway. And the worst part is I start on my life again, and the peach is gone from my inventory. So I went through all of that. He didn't eat the peach. He still killed me, and I lost it from my inventory.
Right. It's a lot of trial and error, and it's so cryptic and obtuse that you don't really know what you're doing. But when you do figure it out, it kind of feels like, huh. Like the game's interesting because my experience, I think everybody's experience is different because it allows you to play a multitude of different characters depending on once you first die, like Ren dies. Then you choose like a new body that's this weird eyeball creature with like a weird mouth and weird nose and all that. And depending on like the selection you make, it deciphers what your goal is. And I ended up picking a character that like the goal was to find like musical instruments. And so
yes, that was called Shaw.
Yeah. And so I actually got kind of far. I realized like I was listening a little bit to what everything was telling me, all the weird characters and instances. And they were like, oh, yeah, you need I need a flower made from flame. And I'm like, what does that even mean? And then at one point I accidentally came across like an area that had two dragons that were like shooting fire in my face. And I clicked them and they would shoot fire at each other. And then they made a fire flower. And I'm like, oh, OK, cool. And I grabbed that and then I gave it to like the dead creature. And the creature woke up and told me other things I need to do. And like, you need to collect these and hit these bells. And I'm like, what the fuck is going on? Like, even though I was figuring out like what to do, I'm still not, I have no clarity of my mission other than collect things, figure out puzzles, don't die again. And eventually you'll reach some kind of nirvana. I don't know.
Yeah, so funny thing about the flower. So they give you a hint that the golden flower is born out of fire. Yeah. That's your hint. So that market that was in the rock with the eye from before, they actually sell a flower. So I went, okay, so that's a flower. I went, I got the items for the flower, I traded, and then if I don't know if you remember, if you click on the right cheekbone of Tongno, there's an area with chest with a book.
Oh, with the eyeball behind then, the prison? Like yes. The bars?
And then yeah. There is a room with flames. So I like, I'm going to use the... I had been killed by the flames on that room before. So I go, all right, I'm going to use the flower here with the flames and I will get the golden flower. And I got burned and died again. I'm like, you son of a... Like every time I thought like, okay, I think I'm onto something, I was completely like...
But you were in the right area. You were in the right area because that... what's funny is they shouldn't have gave you that flower. I got that same flower. It was like a purple kind of like... It was a purple flower, right? You got from the market, the yes. Crazy market. Yeah, but that's not the flower they're talking about. When you... I just randomly clicked around while looking around in the realm of whatever the pleasure or whatever the hell it's called. And I was able to move like a statue, and that's where I found the two dragons that shot fire at each other, and they made the fire flower. And then
it's literally next, like you start right there with that character. That's the worst part.
I know, and so, it doesn't, and you just kind of have to search around. It's a lot of trial and error. It's a point and click that even if you're doing the right things, you're given more questions than answers. Like you get...
Were you actually able to finish that scenario?
No.
So no. I did go through like a whole playthrough because I did want to see like the whole game just to have a more informed opinion. Because at that point, I had put way too many hours and got nowhere. And so, you know, you have some golden bells when you start.
Right. Oh, you get like the chandelier bells, right? Like if you're the music person.
Yeah. They need to be used at the most random screen. And you use them and you get like a drum.
You're supposed to collect four instruments though, right?
Yeah, and they're all in different places. And the thing is like, I don't think there's any way to do this but just trying to use the instruments in every screen. Because I was like, this is just such a random spot to use this. Like, I don't know how this person knew. Oh, with that said, you know, on that cheekbone prison, that book, I don't know if you actually open it. That thing is like...
I looked through it.
Anywhere between 50 and 100 pages. I'm not even kidding.
Oh, it doesn't make any sense either. And it's so in depth, and
it's very cryptic, but it goes through every Magatama. The Magatamas are basically every life after Rin. It goes through every NPC. So I think that book is a big way of how to get through the game, but it also makes no sense. So I spent there going from like, there's maps of the different areas. The maps make no sense. Like nothing makes sense. So I think this game tries to give you the tools to get through it, but I just don't see a way to beat it like intuitively. There's just, it's too obtuse.
It's devoid of logic, you know, and it tries to explain to you some kind of spiritual logic, and thinks that you're going to figure that out, you know, like you're going to think as deep as it is. But then there's too many instances in the game that require a random exploration to continue. And because of that, it kind of breaks away from the spiritual experience that the creator is trying to give you, where I'm like, then it just becomes kind of an annoying game instead of some surreal digital experience that it's trying to be. But I mean, the whole idea, I think, behind the gameplay is that it's trying to express to you reincarnation and like the idea of the search for meaning or the search for what you're doing and what like reality and life is really about. But that was not conveyed to me strongly whatsoever. So
yeah, I think there's a lot of like interpretation here. But another interesting thing I realized is as I was going through the Magatama, the different lives, I'm like, why does this sound so familiar? So, you know, basically when you finish a mission, you get a nameplate with a character.
Yeah, it's like a soul. A like you're getting a soul on a tablet, like a wooden or not a wooden, right, but like a stone
but
tablet.
But those particular like syllables like Rincha, Retsu, basically, you know how in anime ninjas and in games they do like the hand gestures with the and they chant something? Those are those same symbols.
Yeah.
So it's those are like basically used in different like Eastern religions and they're like syllables that mean something. But the funny part is that as you go through different life, every life has a mission. They explicitly tell you this is your mission at the beginning. And when the characters fulfill the missions, they die.
I know. Well, and then they move on, right?
Yeah. So, but the other thing is like some of these missions are like this person got set to fail. Their mission in life is just like there's one that is born really small like an ant.
Yeah.
And you just like walk around and you get squashed and they're like your mission is like accomplished and you're like, wait, what?
Well, I think the game's trying to convey to you that like all existence has its own meaning and end, and like the living and dying is the same. I think that's what the mission statement here is. And even if it's like insignificant, like even if it's just an ant getting squashed, like it's still just as important
it might
as a person
be, but
looking
at the same,
around for.
But at the same time, I thought that it was kind of like whatever is making you reincarnate, it's kind of also playing a cruel joke at you. Because
right.
There's one of the characters, their mission is that there's the land of time. There's candles, and each candle represents a life. And your mission is to snuff a particular candle. And the time you when you actually get to the candle and snuff it, you die instantly because that candle was the candle
of your
life.
Yeah, your soul. Yeah.
Yeah. So there was kind of like a sense of irony, but I know there's like a deeper meaning here. Maybe everything has a purpose and a mission that you have to carry out to move on.
Maybe that's the idea, though, is that like your life is a set of candles and every candle is. I'm not trying to defend the game, but I'm saying like I'm seeing what the creator's symbolism was here, is that like you have so many candles in your life. You have so many unlit candles as you're young and you want to, like, those are all goals in your life, achievements you want to make. And like the last candle in your quest in life and your existence is you, and then you snuff it out and then it's over. I'm assuming that's what that point was. I don't know.
Yeah, and the thing is, like, I'm not like, you know, I'm not taking shots at the game because I generally feel that the story behind the scenes and everything, it's actually, when you think about it, this is a thinking game, you know. It kind of stays with you after it, but the actual moment to moment gameplay,
yeah,
it's like, holy crap. The thing is,
it's
like,
aged.
You know, the peach, the flower I found some eyeglasses, I've all these items, a chime. When I looked at the playthrough, they didn't pick up a single item that wasn't directly related to doing the mission. So I'm like, so what? Why do you have all these items that literally like do nothing? It's kind of, the game rewards exploration with something that doesn't seem to have an inherent use.
I agree. It seems nonsensical in some areas, which a game that's already from its basis nonsensical doesn't need any more of that added to it. Because I got the glasses too, like the broken glasses, like one side had a had the thing that is on your ear and the other side didn't. And then like you try to read like the book and you try to like, it's just you, they offer you all these items and they don't explain how, why you obtain them or what they do.
I think maybe that's a lesson in life too.
This is the deepest game ever made.
Yeah, it's like maybe it was so ahead of its time. Maybe we just weren't ready for it. You know,
it's like centuries ahead of its time.
In life, sometimes you will find broken glasses,
and you got to make the best of it.
That's the lesson.
They may
stop. That's it.
They may serve you, and they may not. But you will come across broken glasses. Well, let's talk. Well, yeah. I mean, that's we could really go even further into the gameplay, but I mean, it's at this point we've probably already confused the listeners enough. So let's talk about the graphics and audio. So this game's music is pretty interesting. What do you think of the music?
It's the thing is like sometimes it's like a very like pumping like techno type beat, and then it becomes a very grating like repeating chime type of music. Then sometimes it's ambience, and this will change from screen to screen when you click it, so it feels very confusing. I don't know if it's on purpose, like the whole thing, the whole game is confusing, but the fact that even it's assaulting your auditory senses like constantly, and I think it might be on purpose, but you always feel kind of uncomfortable like while you're playing.
It's true, and a lot of times even when it introduces characters, it'll stop the music, like that weird little like that fun guy that looks like a frosted mini with eyeballs, you know. I also found the music to be like you said, like it's like there's a droning, chanty weirdness to it. And then there's like, for some reason, in the middle of the game, there's like this really dope beat that sounds like some 3-6 Mafia style like rap beat that's I thought was great. And it was out of nowhere. And there was nothing else in the game like that. Later on, it went back to like ambient or like annoying or to make you feel anxious. But it's all over the place, just like the game is.
Yeah, and for example, you know, and it strangely seems to fit the different areas. Like when you go to, I don't know if you remember, there's this forest that's like a maze.
Yeah, yeah.
So everything looks the same. Then that paired with how the music sounds in that area, you are so confused. You don't know if you're actually going anywhere, running around in circles. It's just so like you feel like you're stuck in that moment.
I think that's a part. I think that was crafted to make you feel that way, though, because, you know, a lot of times you will get lost and either going through the forest or going through like the vistas of. And especially when they fork and you have to go one way or another, the music in those areas kind of make you feel unsettled a little bit. And that may have been purpose, but also like I don't care for it. I just don't like things in games like that.
Yeah, but you know, the funny thing is like talking about it and saying this stuff out loud every time, everything kind of sounds more deliberate. And I'm starting to think like now that Osamu Sato is just, he's a genius.
Right. Well, it definitely has to be. I mean, what he made is with this and LSD Dream Simulator, they're both just massive topics of discussion when it comes to existentialism. You know, like they challenge the idea of afterlife and thought, and none of it's done like half-handedly. It's all very, very in your face, to the point where it almost seems too much, and like there's like almost it's gatekeeping for some people to go further into it, because they're like, I don't want to deal with this weirdness. I don't want to hear this crazy hippie tell me about spirits and chakras or any of this. Like, it just felt like that. Like,
yeah, it feels it kind of feels like he was going for an experience more than a game. You know, it's like, this is going to make you uncomfortable, like on a visual level, on an auditory level. Like, it's just, and then the story behind it, it's all kind of pretty overwhelming when you think about it. And I think that maybe that's what he was going for, because I got to give it some credit. I don't think I ever played another game like this one. I don't think there's one out
there.
Well,
I will agree, so far in my life, I haven't played anything this ambitious when it comes to the idea of existence and religion, I guess. That isn't super heavy-handed. This is kind of heavy-handed, but in a sense of it, he had a mission and maybe he's enlightened. I don't know. A part of that makes me think it's a little pretentious and narcissistic that to be like the enlightened one and you have to figure it out through my creations and my art. But I don't know. It's just so different and weird. And I don't know. I mean, I listened to reviews today of other people experiencing it, and I heard everything from people being like, this is the most nonsensical piece of crap, to people like actually being touched and moved by the game. And so it's one of those things where you don't know really where to pinpoint it. So I'm going to ask this. Let's go to verdict. What do you think about this game as a whole? Where do you place this game, and would you recommend this?
Okay, so basically, it's hard for me to recommend this game from a gameplay perspective, because if you go in thinking like, oh, it's a point and click adventure, it's kind of like Myst, you know, I'll just have to figure out the puzzles using logic and that kind of stuff, because it's going to be an exercise in frustration. I do think it's very interesting to experience, like, you know, the weird phase and the weird interaction that happened, but as a gameplay experience, I feel it's very rough, and it's not a good time. Like, I did not feel I was making any progress, and it just, it's hard for me to recommend. But when I did see the whole playthrough and I saw the themes behind it and the message, I actually thought it was very interesting, you know, and deep. So it's kind of hard for me to recommend, kind of like, I will watch a playthrough before recommending someone actually plays through the thing, because I think at the end of the day, they will get the same experience, but just clicking around randomly trying to figure stuff out is just too, rough.
You know, that's a good point. And if there's one thing I can give the game, I guess that I can't deny that it is not a labor of love to somebody's soul, you know. The presentation, maybe the execution of that is a little rough, but who knows? Anyways, Van Fernal, can you let everybody know how to see more of you and how to access your content? You have the floor right now. Tell everybody what you do and where to find you.
All right. So I like to describe myself as a boomer gamer. I was there pretty much since the Atari 2600. So retro games are pretty much my jam. And you can find me on YouTube under Van Fernal's Retro Stream. I stream every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at 8 p.m. Eastern. And I focus either on playing retro games or modern games that are retro style. And you can also, if you want to get in contact with me more directly, you can look me up on Instagram under Retro Stream. That's retro.stream. And I post future episodes, shorts, that kind of thing there. So it's the best way to actually get in contact with me directly. And I recommend you guys to just drop by the show, say hi. And, you know, we always have a good time in the chat. I have a pretty good community there. And I'd love to see you guys there.
Awesome. And I frequent his stream very often. It's really fun. The production's fantastic. I hope that you all check it out. And thank you so much, man. I it was absolute pleasure to have you on the show. And I really appreciate you spending time with this game this week, as weird as it was. So thank you, brother. I'm glad you came around.
Yeah, I'm. Thank you for inviting me. And, you know, at the end of the day, I think I enjoyed the experience. I'm always down to trying out a new game just to see something that I've never experienced before. And definitely got that this time. So thank you very much.
I want to thank Van Fernal for coming on the show. Thank you so much. You're always welcome to come back. Great episode. And I'm going to give my verdict right now on the game. So, what is Eastern Mine, the Lost Souls of Tongno? Well, Maybe it's just like life, right? But is life really just a series of nonsensical errands with no meaning? Or do we give it meaning? Just like Easter Mind, are we just blindly searching for answers that are only presented in past tense through the life we live and the experiences we've endured? If one crazy-eyed wild creature, no different than maybe a flat tire or a rough day at work that challenges your resolve to overcome, is that any different than the ideals we have to appreciate what we have in this world and the fact that we even exist? If I see you and I hear you and I feel you from my soul, does that make my being any better than that of an ant or a fly or clouds that coexist among us in this wild and unexplained realm we call reality? You know, maybe in the end, the answer to the great question being presented is everything you do doesn't matter. But the only thing that matters is what you do. I give this game an F.
Thank you for watching with my dad. I just want to say, everybody, guys, bye.